EII.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of the French Connection. Today's date is it's a Friday, and it is the 24th day of October 2008. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. As usual, it's an honor to be part of your day today. We are in the middle of a big battle going on in the financial markets. Of course, what we're going to discover as we talk tonight is that this is all happening by design, and I must caution everybody right now when they're reading their newspapers to be very suspicious of them telling you that this is over, that enough money has been put into the system, that we won't be going further down, all of these different things. Basically, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to have some ups and some downs, but basically with the trend line and the future of these markets is straight down. So it's going to translate into all kinds of problems for the poorest in the society and for people who have not prepared well for what is on our horizon. So I've been doing this stuff now for 5 years, but prior to that, I did get a great education in finance and in business management. So I knew a lot before I started my research about who was really controlling things. And even when I started, it was hard for me to come to grips with the idea that people that I had always assumed were honorable, patriotic, if you will, or honest, if another term that I used to banter around in my head, were actually working in the best interest of people of the society I lived in. As I discovered over time that that wasn't true, and that the fact was there was indeed a conspiracy, I had a lot of trouble with it. It came on the heels of understanding that the elections had been stolen in the United States. The second time when they were stolen by George Bush, I had looked into who was in his administration. I looked into who was financing him. I looked into who got involved in his father's financing. And I also looked into the connections between him, his family, his administration, and the people that were circulating around 9/11. In each instance, there were contacts such as a man named Mark Rich, a very illegal, criminal man who had been pardoned by Bill Clinton during Clinton's administration, but a multi-millionaire who was also very prevalent in the George Bush administration, a man named Abramoff, also very prevalent. And what I was beginning to discover, another man named Frank Lowy was involved, another man named Estee Lauder's son, what the heck was his name, his first name, but his name was Lauder. Anyway, they were all involved in very, what I saw as questionable activities, and a lot of suspicion had to be placed upon these people. And I started looking behind the veil of what they were and what they did and who they were associated with. And in every instance, they had very powerful ties to the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. They had powerful ties to Israel, and they had very powerful ties to the Mossad. Now, people from South Africa know the Mossad very well. They were working together through the apartheid era, the Mossad and the police of South Africa that were, of course, surrounding people up and subjugating them and destroying their family lives and murdering many people, in fact. So you are well aware of what the Mossad is and does. But I hadn't been aware of it. I had known a lot of Jewish people in New York from day-to-day living, neighbors of people who, I've told this story before, one woman who lived in the building next to mine, just from sitting out in the park area, I got to know her. She had a handicapped son. We became friends. And Jewish lady, very nice. In fact, she knew I was a college student some years ago, and she knew I didn't have much money. So she used to treat me to food and give me a couple of bucks and have salads and all kinds of stuff. Very nice human being, very wonderful person. My friends had friends at school that I would take classes with that were very nice from the Jewish community. So it was hard for me to suspend those beliefs and say, wait a minute here, there are very nefarious people in their community doing these things. So once I was able to wrap my brain around the fact that there was a conspiracy, I started connecting the dots. Which leads us to where we are today with the financial system being under pressure. When you look behind these financial moves in the world, you find out that each and every one of them are in the hands of Zionist Jews. And it's not me saying that as a racist statement, but it's a statement of fact. You know, I've often used a statistic that's shocking to most people, that 1 in 25,000 people on our planet, just 1 out of 25,000 is Jewish. But 7 out of 10 billionaires are Jewish. Let me say that again. 7 out of every 10 billionaires in our world are Jewish. But only one person in 25,000 is Jewish. Now, there's something wrong with that when you hear that. If I said to you 1 in 30,000 people in the world are Mongolians, let's say, but 7 out of 10 billionaires in the world are Mongolian, you'd say, these Mongolians are doing something very strange. You'd be up in arms. You'd be questioning these Mongolians. You'd be saying, wait a minute, where did you get the money? What did you do to get it? Did you kill somebody? Did you steal? Is there a conspiracy? Well, in fact, ladies and gentlemen, what I discovered was that financially, yes, there is a conspiracy. And interesting, when you start looking at who's on the television sets in front of you every night trying to tell you how to think, they too are from that same community, almost to a man. If you take a look at CNN, people like Wolf Blitzer and what's her name? The woman that did a trashing of me on CNN. I forget her name. Anyway, she's Jewish. All of them. In fact, this guy Jamie Rubin, always on TV with Christiana Amanpour. You'll see her on CNN. And another Jewish woman. On French TV, almost every single presenter and all of the networks are controlled by Jews. And I started saying to myself, why is all the media and all the money controlled by this group? And why is it not just in America? It's also France and Britain and Germany. And I'm guessing that South Africa, if you look behind your major networks that present your news down there, it's the same thing. And I said to myself, there's more to this than just suspicion. There's more to this. Look, where there's smoke, there's fire, ladies and gentlemen. And I arrived at this deductively, and I arrived at this through research, and I started reading books. And the books that I read, let me go back a moment here. What I did is first listen to a man named Benjamin Friedman, a Jewish gentleman. He tipped me over the edge. I had already been looking into the stuff. I had already had very deep suspicions. I had already, read a couple of books and was well on my way to knowing something was very wrong. And then I heard Friedman's work. And I went, you could not help, after hearing Benjamin Friedman, and you'll find him on the website IamTheWitness.com. On the upper left-hand side, you'll see a picture of a man with glasses. His name is Benjamin Friedman. This man lays it out, the conspiracy out, in no uncertain terms. This is a man that was present during the signing of the Balfour, just after Balfour. He was at the armistice signing for World War I, and he was sent there by Morgenthau and Brandeis and all of the criminals that imploded Russia and helped finance the Turkish Empire's implosion, the caliphate. So he knew from whence he spoke. He had a lot of experience in these crimes because he was witness to many of them. He was a young man at the time, and this was a 1960 presentation I heard. So I knew right away he was sincere. I knew right away he was speaking the truth, and I knew right away that I had to do something to stop it. And this was about the time that I started switching from just talking about George Bush and Cheney and the rest of them on a radio show that I had started on Network in America, and began probing the conspiracy as it really is, the facts as I really found them. And, you know, where I am today, I've dug through so many things. I've read tens of thousands of hours of reading, documents and books and emails and news articles and newspapers. I read everything. You can't imagine the time I spend reading to get a handle on how far down this conspiracy trail really goes. And I got to say to you now, we are on the verge of a financial failure worldwide. Now, I did listen to Inayat Wadi's guest, and I applaud Inayat Wadi's work. He's one of the finest presenters probably in the world, certainly in South Africa. Great man, very kind person as well. Interesting to listen to his programming. The man he had on, talking about sovereign funds and state funds and this and that, he's making a presumption when he talks about those things. And what he's saying is that things within the community should have some benefit to back to the public, which is a very good idea. But the fact of the matter is, everything we do today, doesn't matter if it's your home loan or a credit card loan or a car loan or any borrowing you do, any banking you do, anything you do to try and stay abreast of all of the activity in this modern world, like buying a television on credit or whatever else, you are moving through a Zionist Jewish bank in some way or another. And this situation has to change. This system has to be reexamined. This, in spite of the good ideas that the man had on the Nayat Wadi's program, is not workable as long as we have a financial system dominated by these people. This is a fact. So what I'm saying to you right now is that we need to rethink the way we do our transactions and our financing of everything we do. It has to be rethought, re-engineered, and then relaunched to be fair. Now, I'm not saying I don't believe in socialism. I don't believe, taking from one and giving to another. I believe if someone has honestly gained what they have in their life by whatever means they worked hard or they saved it or their family pooled their money together or whatever it is they've done, should not have it confiscated and given to another who has not done those things. But at the same time, everybody should have the same chance to be successful. In other words, the same access to all things. The most important things in life. Access is everything, ladies and gentlemen. If you give somebody access fairly, they will make their way in life. They will rise to the level of their own abilities. This is what I have found in my own world. People will blossom when they're ready, or maybe they never will, but they will get their just desserts if the playing field is fair. But we don't have a fair playing field today. We don't play fair in business. We don't play fair in the way we distribute money, by the way we offer up our education. Education is not for teaching someone to think. It's for teaching someone to memorize. Well, we'll get into that in another time. But so as I'm going down this whole thing, I'm starting to understand that we need to rethink the entire way we have been doing everything. And because everything has been usurped or controlled or refiltered through Zionist criminality, everything. Our education system worldwide stops you from probing important questions. You can't. There's no free speech. There's no free thought. Here in Europe, you can go to jail for asking certain questions. I'm sure there are people are trying to stop free speech rights in South Africa as we speak. So my point is that we don't have the bedrock of a free society where we could benefit ourselves through our own efforts. It's a stacked deck, ladies and gentlemen. You are designed to fail, or you are designed to stay stuck in a certain class of people. And no matter how hard you work, it's designed that you will never break free of it. And over the last several years, what we have seen is that this top group, this Zionist criminal group, has been taking more and more power and being, the hubris, the right word to use is hubris, the gall of these people. They don't even care anymore that we know who they are. They act with impunity. And even the court systems are controlled by them, so they don't worry about facing a judgment. There have been several cases in the United States where murder charges were brought against people from this community, and incredibly, in the face of overwhelming evidence, they were acquitted. Incredible stuff that you couldn't believe it if you saw it. So why am I bringing all this stuff up? Because we're at a turning point. We're at the crossroads right now. We're at a place right now where people are going to be terribly affected by what's coming. And regardless of what they keep saying about, oh, we're going to come out of this at some point very soon, or things will turn around, that is not happening. In fact, as the days pass, as the weeks pass, there is a deepening of this crisis. Today's markets in Europe dropped 7, 8, 9%. America right now is closing its stock markets, and they're down 6, 7%. On the year since January, 10 months ago, ladies and gentlemen, some of these stock markets have lost half of their value. Now, why is that important to you? But the simple fact of the matter is that companies go to stock markets for capital and money and investments so that they can expand their businesses, so they can build more equipment or do more mining if it's in the case of a South African mine, or for Ford Motor Company to build more automobiles or whatever. The fact of the matter is right now these companies are failing. There are no customers. There's no money for them. The implosion is starting to take its toll across every type of business. It doesn't matter if it's a restaurant or a clothing manufacturer or a food producer or a car manufacturer. It doesn't matter. They are all going through terrible contractions right now. And it's because the entire financial system has been brought to its knees intentionally by decisions that were made by people like Alan Greenspan, whom I must say at one time I used to admire. I didn't understand the kind of man he really was and the things he was really doing. And this is somebody telling you that I'm well educated in these areas, and I was not aware what he was really doing to the money supply and what he was really doing to credit worldwide. What they did in the United States was allowed people to have very liberal credit until what was developing was a bubble, a huge amount of upward pressure on inflationary values, and you saw housing prices doubling in a 10-year period. You saw people's income starting to rise disproportionate to their value. And this stuff was allowed to happen intentionally. I'm positive of it. Once you start looking at the way it was done and the effects that it's having, you start to understand that these things were not by mistake but by design. And now what we're having here is a terrible suffering across the world, especially in places like America and Canada and Europe. And I dare say places like South Africa, who have a very developed first world economy, you in South Africa are feeling these terrible effects as well. And where is it all heading? Well, I'm fighting world Zionism. I'm fighting these criminals who set this up. I'm fighting the people who have been leading us down this path of destruction for the last 100 years. But the simple fact is fighting it alone is not good enough. What we have to do when we fight it is to have alternatives ready to be put in place so we can fix the problems as we come upon them. And I don't see a groundswell strong enough for us to even start contemplating these things. It frustrates me when I look out and say to the United States and see how few people really understand what's been done, why it's been done, and who's been doing it. And that's true here in Europe as well. And I'm sure it's true down in South Africa. But I keep pounding. I keep the message alive. I keep saying the truth. I keep putting forth the research. And I keep hoping that at some point a fire of understanding will ignite here, what we need is a tsunami of knowledge being thrown around the world so that people just wake up and say, wait a minute, how could I have not seen this? How could I have not understood that my media was entirely controlled by such a small group? How could one half of 1% of the population of South Africa is Jewish? How could they control 60% of the stock market? Ask yourself that. Or how could they control the entire mining industry? Ask yourself that. Or how is it that when you look behind every media corporation, there you find the same group? How? Or how is it that this one half of 1% could shut down free speech in a radio station like they did to Yaakov Zaki when he came down and spoke the truth about these people? Or the threats being placed against CII for having me explain these facts to you. Threats coming in. How could one half of 1% of the population have such power? And if they exercise that kind of power from those kind of percentages, is it hard for you to understand how they can do it worldwide? And is it further difficult for you to understand that this is by design and not by accident? And that in spite of their telling you, oh, it's not true, don't look behind the curtain, the man you're seeing behind the curtain is really not the bad guy, but in fact, it's nobody, don't look there, it's nothing. The fact is, ladies and gentlemen, when you look back there, what you find is Zionist Jews. Now, again, I say Zionist because my friend in New York is Jewish and she's not part of the group. She's a very nice person and should not be blamed for this. And anybody who blames all Jews is a racist. Because basically, ladies and gentlemen, you blame criminals for the crimes. You don't blame everyone for something that some people didn't do. Now, I've had people on my show who made a claim that culturally this group of people is predisposed by their education to take actions that are against everyone else except their own community. And there is a certain amount of truth to that. And when you examine it rationally, you can see that in the Talmud, which is a religious book of the Jewish community, Gentiles, or we non-Jews, are considered less than human. And it's written in these books. In fact, it's stated clearly that every Jew is supposed to have 10 slaves in heaven, and this is the slaves are the Gentiles, and that we are nothing more than cattle. Amazing statements that are being made. Now, this is their religious indoctrination. When you understand that these are the things that these young children are taught in their Hebrew schools, it's a frightening thought. However, most people with a good heart could never sign on to those kinds of sicknesses. I mean, let's face it, you could tell me all you want that other people that I live around aren't human, and I would know that that's a nonsense. I would be clear about it immediately. And the same is true with many Jewish people. They know that stuff is ridiculous, and they don't subscribe to it. However, I have to admit that the community itself, the community of Jewish people, has a predisposition to feel this way by indoctrination. And then this brings us to the country of Israel. This place is such a closed society, and they're fed so much dogmatic sickness in their daily lives that they have almost become they're a diseased society. They're a mentally ill society. They're a society that murders, rapes, pillages, and plunders, and does it with pleasure.